If you enjoy the content ProWrestling.net produces on this All Access podcast, please make sure to go to Apple Podcasts, rate us, review us, tell your friends about us, give a retweet to the link when Jason Powell puts it out there. Do everything you can to let people know how much you enjoy this podcast. Also, if you want more great content from ProWrestling.net, including ad-free access to the ProWrestling.net website, sign up for .net membership. For as low as $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, or $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out for a month, you get exclusive audio content, including the .net weekly audio show, and first-run news on occasion, and ad-free access to the site. Guys, this is a no-brainer. Get ProWrestling.net membership. And now enjoy the show. This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, WWE's babyfaces wrestle with sincerity. So, Jake, I have a really important question to ask you, and I have to ask this. I don't have an option. It's basically contractually obligated, and I'm sorry to any listeners. Genitalia is about to be mentioned. Jake, why is the Great Balls of Fire logo a giant penis?
That is a fantastic question. I think my answer to you on Twitter was that Vince McMahon is a 12-year-old boy, and yeah. I think that stands. I can't imagine how that got through all of WWE's layers of marketing and PR without yeah. Vince going, this doesn't look quite enough like a cock and balls to me.
Yeah, a little penisier, just a little bit, girthier, you know? Like, I cannot imagine how any, like, large corporation that is not pro wrestling puts out that logo. It looks awful. Like, design-wise, it looks bad anyways, but it just looks so terrible. I almost can't help but laugh at it.
I think people are mocking it, like, that work for the company on Twitter. I've seen Sasha Banks say something about it, and I think there was another kind of allusion to it by Seth Rollins that people were posting, and he had, like, liked on Instagram a couple of places. So, yeah, it's definitely a well-known thing inside of the company, but, you know, nobody has at least gone out publicly and said something silly to get themselves in trouble. But
has anyone edited the Great Balls of Fire logo onto the photos that a Seth Rollins ex-girlfriend sent from his Twitter account that one time that happened to include him in the nude?
I have not seen that, but there are pictures.
Well, then, I got things to do.
There are pictures of, WWE does those, you know, matchup photos where they put the logo in between two wrestlers, like headshots or whatever.
And Joe just looks so mad.
And balls are close to very many people's faces in those pictures. So I'm sure they're very pleased about that.
I think Jason said to you the suggestion that they just never tell Brock Lesnar the pay-per-view name.
Like, yeah, just yeah.
WWE show. Yeah, Brock, it's great. We're calling it Brock versus Joe. That's what we're going with.
None of the correspondence with his agent or anybody just mentions the name. He'll just get there and see the set and go, oh, God. Then rage out and throw some TVs around or something.
Yeah, or maybe he'll get there and, like, look at the ring mat in the middle of his match and be like, wait, what? We called this. Hold on. Just stop the match. Everyone. Paul, come here. That's a penis.
The animated gifs during that show are going to be off the charts. Twitter is going to be gift out for Great Balls of Fire.
I mean, maybe the idea is that the name is so bad, it's going to get attention. And in that case, kudos to WWE on picking a really bad and weird pay-per-view name.
I like to believe that they're self-aware enough to know that it's just going to get ripped. And that's fine because, you know, people are going to talk about it. And that's, you know, any publicity is good publicity in some way. But, yeah, I can't imagine how you're in WWE's marketing department and you just go, yeah, I mean, let's just go for it. Here's some balls on our logo.
And with that, Jake, I'm going to turn it over to you because you had kind of the main point for today that you wanted to bring up.
I guess it's been something that's been kind of brewing in my head for a while, and then it just continues to rear its head, you know, watching WWE post WrestleMania in particular. And I don't know if you feel exactly the way that I do about it, and you can interrupt me whenever you feel like it. But
I usually do.
Yeah, but I don't believe anything that comes out of most of the baby faces on WWE television. And whether that's, you know, Seth Rollins or Bayley, or, you know, even, you know, they're trying to cast Charlotte in some way like that, Naomi, you know, the major baby face champions. And none of them to me sound like they believe what they're saying. And then that goes to Austin Aries over on 205 Live. They feel like robots, and uninteresting robots at that. Like Finn Balor, you know, he's another one that comes to mind. Like I watch, you know, these guys do their appearances on radio shows and media events you know, just kind of other fan service stuff. And they seem so much more entertaining and natural in that environment than they do on WWE television. And I don't know quite what to blame it on, whether it's just, you know, creative, you know, strangling their passion, or whether it's an issue with you know, with performers not quite knowing how to take what's written to them and copy and translate it into, you know, a natural sounding promo, you know, when they're in front of a camera. I guess personally, growing up watching wrestling and over the years, you know, I've always found that characters that are close to the you know, the performer's real personality that they feel natural with are what comes across best on TV. And really, to me, it feels like they have a lot of characters playing against their natural inclinations, and the result is obvious. I mean, they're just not doing very well, and a lot of that could be, you know, just low acting ability too. But to me, there's a serious sincerity gap in WWE, where not a lot of the things being said on television sound believable, like they came out of the brains and heads of the people who are saying them.
I would agree with that. I think WWE has a real problem with sincerity. Less so in heels. They say it's easier to be disliked than liked, and I think that's mostly true today. Still true today. There are some cases where I believe fans purposefully like people they're supposed to dislike and vice versa, but that's usually a minimal amount of fans and not the largest issue. But there is a real problem within WWE with sincerity, and I think this problem starts from the top down. Just like I do with the poor writing of WWE in general, I kind of look at Vince McMahon up top and I go, this is not a person who values sincerity or even understands it or gets it. And I think that goes, that kind of rolls downhill at the writers, at the agents, at the fans, at all of those people. And I would point to a contrast from WWE. It's within its own company. I would point at NXT as a brand and a show that understands sincerity. And I would look at the greatest successes of NXT being Bayley, and I would say Sami Zayn, as people who came off unbelievably sincere in the ring during their runs in NXT. I would also look at wrestlers like Sasha Banks, who seemed so much more sincere as both a heel and a babyface in NXT. And I would look at guys right now like Roderick Strong, like Hideo Itami, with the story they told with him at that WrestleMania show. Like, you look at, or even Finn Balor and the documentary about him building Legos in his home. You look at all of what they did with these wrestlers, and to actually paint them as sincere people first and wrestlers second, and that is so different than what the main roster in WWE does and what they tend to expect. And I think the problem really does come from that system, because they're, even those characters that we were just talking about, I don't believe Finn Balor on Raw. I don't believe Bayley on Raw. There are issues with the characters who came up in that sincere system who are now outside of it, and they are having real problems.
And I guess the issue seems limited somewhat to baby faces, and maybe it's because, and you know, there have been numerous people, you know, I've heard Steve Austin talk about it and Mick Foley at various points, and those are two guys that are fairly good you know, character wrestlers. You know, they talk about how it's much harder to be a convincing baby face, and maybe it's just a matter of you know, certain wrestlers not really having it in them to be, you know, that kind of sincere and inspiring type of character. I mean, I think we saw it much better from Bayley in NXT than we have on the main roster. And certainly some of that is her own performance problems. I mean, you know, it really does sound like a robot talking when she's cutting a promo on Raw these days. And whether that's because she's personally uninspired by what she's been doing, I'm not sure.
Who can blame her?
But it really does seem like there's an issue there that is going to, that's difficult to fix without, you know, having a fairly deep, you know, psychological understanding of the person who's performing and of the creators who are writing the content and the relationship between them. And I mean, it's a complex thing, you know, getting a performance out of somebody that's memorable. And you know, in the TV world where things are all pre-recorded, you have multiple takes and, you know, the people are having interactions. And that's a lot of that is taken away in a live environment. But it sure does seem like now more than in recent memory that there is this issue with characters coming across as disingenuous when you know that's not likely what they intended and not how it was written, but they're just not delivering it well. And I'm not sure if there's one place to squarely place the blame, but it isn't an issue that exists, and it seems to translate across Raw and SmackDown, and it follows, you know, different creative teams on both of those shows. And so, I mean, there's obviously commonalities there that you have to factor in, but it's a pretty pervasive problem, and I think it's one that makes the show difficult to watch at times because, you know, if you're not seeing a character that's inspiring, or you're not seeing, like, for instance, we talked about this, I'm trying to think if it was 1 or 2 weeks ago, but the issue with the This Is Your Life segment on Raw between Bayley and Alexa Bliss. I mean, they send Alexa Bliss out there to cut into Bayley, but the entire time that Bayley spent on Raw, she's been this ill-defined and oftentimes insincere character who just, you know, I'm really excited. It's been my lifelong dream to be a champion. You know, and it's just like it's hard to like get upset about somebody making fun of that character because there's so many reasons why you would probably do it yourself, you know, and that's, it's difficult because I like Bayley and I like what she was. And so it's troubling for me that so many people that I respect and admire as performers have seemingly stumbled out of the gates, you know, in a performance perspective, you know, on the microphone. And there's longtime characters like Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose that seem to be victim to this same problem. And I look at John Cena as like, okay, here's a guy who managed to take every crap thing that was handed to him over his entire career, and somehow, you know, he's managed to make it through, not always popular, but always as a babyface that found fire and found believability, even in the most ridiculous of situations. And of course, there are times that I remember rolling my eyes at him, but I don't remember it being quite as bad as it's been with some of these more recent call-ups and recent babyface turns.
And even in John Cena's worst performances, he found, like, he went into Preacher Man Cena mode, and Preacher Man Cena is and will always be fire. Like, Preacher Man Cena is really, really exciting and fun to watch, and there is something sincere about that that works, and part of it is call and response with the crowd and getting as fired up as he does. So, as we talk about the sincerity problem, who do you think avoids that sincerity problem? You say most baby faces on the WWE roster, and who do you look at that seem? Who do you look at that kind of avoids that issue in a way that isn't, that may be able to be replicated?
I see New Day as prime examples of that. And I also see Becky Lynch as an example of that. And I know that there's probably a desire at some point in both of them to play heels, but I think they found a way to connect their TV personalities with their own personality quirks. And sometimes it involves some fourth wall breaking, and sometimes it involves, maybe even, you know, breaking outside of the boundaries of their scripted lines or whatever the case may be. But I think that we need more of that on WWE television. And I think they're, you know, maybe there's some people that are afraid to break the mold in some ways. And I'm sure, you know, New Day is pushing those boundaries more regularly than some others would because they're actually well-liked. I mean, I think there was an instance where Big E literally said, you know, he didn't write that joke after saying it on Raw one week. And you knew that, you know, obviously it was tongue-in-cheek. And so, you know, those are the people that you can buy into, people that you feel, at least in my mind, that are speaking to, you know, their own experiences, even though they're talking through a character. And others, I don't think, specifically, you know, like the Finn Balors and the Baileys of the world, like I don't feel like they go out there and attempt to connect what their character is experiencing with their own life experiences. And I think there needs to be a lot more of that. And certainly with some of the more successful heels, you see that a lot. And I'm wondering why that isn't encouraged more with baby faces, because it seems to work for most of them, you know, the successful ones anyway.
One of the things kind of in common with Becky Lynch and the New Day is that there's a certain amount of quirkiness to them. And Becky Lynch, of course, uses a ton of puns, and there's a jokiness to her that is really fun, actually. And even her, when she comes out and is spitting straight catchphrases like spitting straight fire, it's hard to buy into it all the time, but she has the benefit of the doubt. The same thing with the New Day, who are catchphrase machines, who I think go so far overboard, like they go so far to one direction that you count it as sincerity still. It's almost like they go all the way around the sincerity cycle to where they have to be sincere at the very end of it, even though they are essentially ridiculous. And there's something to that. I would point to Daniel Bryan as kind of the standard bearer of sincerity in WWE, and his journey into WrestleMania 30 as what sincerity can be, the story that sincerity can help you tell. And I look at that as someone that was kind of unexpected for WWE. Obviously, Bryan wasn't the plan. It wasn't what they wanted to do. They realized that they were going to have a walkout, essentially, of their Mania main event if they didn't put him in it. And that led them to change things. I look at Bryan as kind of the key to, as holding a lot of keys to sincerity in wrestling. And part of that is just personal connection. And the WWE main roster format does not foster personal connection with wrestlers all that often. Look at the way they choose to introduce guys. I mean, the problems they constantly have with certain talents that they want to introduce where you just have no idea who they are. Look at Bayley. Jake, do you think Bayley would have been helped by a WWE 24-like, but it airs during Raw documentary showing her maybe granting a make-a-wish? Because I'm sure she gets a lot of them. Granting a make-a-wish, doing, you know, kind of getting to know a city or exploring a place leading up to a big match. Because, or even just a documentary about her childhood and who she's been in her life and who she is now. I think that stuff is what hooks people. It's that personal history that you can buy into. And that's what WWE never does on the main roster. And even if they do it and do it really well on WWE 24, which they do, they're spectacular at doing that on WWE 24. They don't do that on their actual main roster TV. And I know people kind of complain. I think Jason's been complaining about the last SmackDown he went to where he had to watch Randy Orton burn a house down at the end, and that was their main event, and admittedly, that all sucked. But you can't say that fans even in an arena would absolutely crap on, hey, tonight, 15 minutes of the show, it's going to be dedicated to this documentary, we're going to air it in three parts, but then the wrestler is going to come out at some point, or then the wrestler is going to do something. And they are going to be applauded more. They are going to be more over than they were prior to that airing. I think that would work for any wrestler, anyone that you want to be sincere. Let me actually see them when they're not standing in the ring with a microphone talking like this.
I think the Bayley example, particularly, you know, they tried to make Bayley into this, you know, sort of sincere, inspirational character who, you know, who appeals to children. And I guess her early success in the company in NXT was the result of her persevering against, you know, being an underdog and consistently coming up short of her own goals, you know, until, you know, she honed her skills to the point where she was competing at a high level and was winning matches. And I think they skipped over the most important part of that story on Raw. And so she feels like somebody who had already overcame all of her shortcomings before arriving at Raw. And they never really charted a path forward for her. It just kind of felt like she was, you know, in a spin cycle of sort of reliving that same experience over without having the advantage of spending 2 years telling that story. And, you know, they have the same issue in some cases with Seth Rollins, where he came back from injury and people really wanted to boo the guy, but they really never had, you know, they had other plans for him. And so, you know, they took a guy who they had never previously established as a babyface and just kind of let him figure it out. And they spent, you know, months without Triple H appearing on television trying to get him over as a babyface. And it never really happened when they, you know, that should have been their first step, is you know, really setting him up as that, as an adversary, and giving people a reason to cheer him and hate Triple H simultaneously. And they waited way too long. So a lot of it is, you know, their own doing, and a lot of it is, you know, the booking mistakes. But there's that portion of it, you know, that we originally talked about, or that I first talked about, where I have to believe you. And if the character you're playing is so far removed from your own personality that, you know, it's difficult for you to connect what you're saying to how you've been living your life, or somebody else that inspired you, then I don't think you're going to come across, you know, as an inspirational character that people want to get behind. I mean, say what you want about somebody like Hulk Hogan, for instance, but I think he was, you know, he was self-deluded enough that he believed everything he was saying, you know, like whether or not he, you know, he was truly a decent person or not. I think he bought into his own character to the point where it was easy to see him playing it. And the same goes for other, you know, successful baby faces, regardless of, you know, their personal character outside, you know, of the ring and off of television. You know, they would buy into their own character, their own success, their own hype, whatever you want to call it, to the point where, you know, they were who they were portraying themselves as on television. And there's an element that of that that's probably impossible today, you know, with social media and having to play one character on TV and play, you know, yourself away from TV, which is the expectation. But there seems to be a lack of buy-in in some of these cases, where either the talent isn't really enthused with what they're doing, or they would rather be doing something else, or they don't feel a connection to the writing or to their own character. And I think the on-screen product suffers as a result of it. And I, you know, other than a wholesale revisiting of, you know, this process of how these characters are created and assigned and handled and produced, you know, I don't know where you go, you know, and it's going to be a difficult transition to sort of fix all these people that are broken, because it's not like you can, you know, they could just stop appearing on TV and go through a refresh cycle all at the same time. So it's a big issue, and one that I think is reflected in, you know, in the diminishing audience that we've seen. I mean, I just saw a Reddit post that kind of went over WWE's ratings since the Attitude Era, and it's basically a straight line down. Like, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I don't know. You know, there's other factors in there besides the, you know, the product. I mean, cable audience slipping behind, and the wrestling audience getting older and maybe not watching as frequently as their life changes, and things along those lines. But at the end of the day, you know, the only way you're going to attract a new audience is to adapt your creative product to, you know, the type of audience you're trying to attract. And I think there's a disconnect there that they need to fix.
So as we talk about that, and as we kind of wrap up this conversation, I want to point out, to me, this is a bigger issue than just WWE not, you know, well, they don't make characters sincere anymore. I think when you come out and look at the issue, the thing to me is WWE isn't producing sincere television. Like, there, to me, the issue is so much with how WWE chooses to make TV that I don't even I'm going to walk to the ring and stand here and someone else is going to walk out with a microphone and I'm going to hold my microphone down by my side and that person's, that's not real. And people don't buy into that the way they used to. And even the schlocky 1980s didn't have that. And they were ridiculous. You had the coked up promos of all coked up promos from Hogan, Savage, and Warrior. It's like this trifecta of silliness to us now, but they didn't have to stand there while their opponent talked and let them do that. There is a strange thing in wrestling where so many of the tropes that we as fans don't see as much. I know I'm personally a little bit blind to some of them. Like, I look at some of the things in wrestling and I'm like, well, of course they do that. That's wrestling. And then I go, wait, but there's no reason for it. Like, they do it, but there's no reason to do it that way. And I think WWE is stuck in their tropes and stuck in the way that they've always done things to such an extent that they can't break out of it. And that to me is the sincerity issue. It's the storytelling issue. It's so many of the problems that they have.
I think there's a genuine fear of it too. Not necessarily of change, but of, you know, I think they've gotten convinced that, that wrestling fans or that, culture in general is sort of afraid of embarrassing itself by being, sincere or cheesy or however you want to call it. They don't really go for those types of stories or those types of characters where people are portraying, a genuinely straightforward and honest person. And Daniel Bryan was a crazy exception to that rule, but that was who he was, that was who he is. And so, they don't really shoot for that because I think they're sort of, afraid of not looking cool. And I think there's a real investment, since the Attitude Era, really, of looking and appearing cool. And you see it all over, the product with immediately, babyface that they don't pay much attention to suddenly becomes a cool heel and everybody starts talking about how amazing it is. And I think there's an issue from a creative standpoint where there's not a lot of interest in making the types of characters that are inspirational and that really do reach out to the entire audience and to kids not necessarily in the way that, John Cena or Hulk Hogan did, but in a way that fits with modern times. And I think Daniel Bryan is probably, emblematic of that. Like, people were desperate for that kind of character in wrestling and they responded to it. And yet they've abandoned it again after he disappeared. And I really can't give you an answer why.
Yeah. And I do think there is this concern with, but we need to seem cool. We need to seem hip. And that the idea of cool is also being set by, one of the lead writers on SmackDown who wore an Eric Cartman shirt in 1997 on TV. Now having wrestlers make constant Eric Cartman jokes about Kevin Owens, like, hey, that was a happy 20-year anniversary, South Park. Like, why? What is that? And why are you doing it now? That's not, that is not going to make you seem hip, but there is an amount of, like, what people think is cool is kind of the anti-culture, and what they think catches on is this, like, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it, because anti-culture, I don't think, is even a real term.
But counterculture is what you're looking for.
Thank you. Kind of this counterculture approach of the 90s, and that's not what people want anymore. And they also don't want it to be, like, in the culture. They want, there's something in the middle there that is just sincerity, that is someone being themselves. And, I remember after WrestleMania 31, WWE had this documentary they put out about Roman Reigns and the buildup to WrestleMania 31. And I remember sitting down and watching that. And it was a 24 special, one of the first ones. And there were these moments with Roman and his daughter, like, exploring Levi's Stadium and all of that. And I went, oh, my gosh, this is what they need to air. If they want Roman to be a popular babyface, air this, like, show parts of this somehow. And it should have been half of the last Raw before WrestleMania that year, especially given how poorly built up that match was. And WWE just, they are so allergic to people feeling actual things, to, like, real genuine feelings, that when they do stumble on them, when they stumble upon those moments of true emotion, it has to be by mistake. It feels like an accident, but they're so powerful because WWE is so bad at providing them. And I don't think they can resist
you know, doing the exact opposite of what you're looking for. Like, you know, the one time they brought in Roman Reigns' daughter as a part of a storyline, she immediately became the person in peril and that he had to rescue. I think it was with Bray Wyatt, wasn't it?
They did a weird, like, Roman Reigns is in your house or Bray Wyatt's in your house thing.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't want to build, you know, a story around Roman Reigns becoming a successful family man and dedicating, you know, his success to, you know, his daughter and his family and being, you know, an inspirational type of person. They immediately think, hey, he's got a little girl. Let's use our evil cult leader guy and put her in peril. You know, it's like, well, that's not necessarily, you know, going to get Roman Reigns over. You know, I mean, I think he's just doing what any parent would do if somebody was threatening their child. But if he, you know, was, you know, if he took the opposite approach and, you know, he not only, you know, used his family as one of the foundational pillars of his character in his life, and wanted to improve himself and dedicate, you know, his future success and to them and to creating a better life for himself and them. That's an inspirational character. But Bray Wyatt being, you know, the creepy guy who shows up and attempts to kidnap his daughter, that's, you know, at the time everybody was like, why, what? You know, it's the complete opposite of what you would want to see from a babyface character. And to this day, I don't think they've ever gotten it right with him. He you know, he's still, you know, in that fine line where if somebody mentions his name, there's just a huge portion of the crowd that's immediately turned off. And they just miss the boat pretty much every opportunity they get.
Yeah, and you look at the approaches they've taken with him. They've never just, I mean, they did like the weird sit down interviews of Roman coming back from injury leading. Like, I remember the infamous one, I think at TLC 2014, that was just so terrible. You were like, why did you wear this? Like, what were you thinking, WWE? And it is part of, you know, people say, you know, well, Daniel Bryan is what led to Roman Reigns getting the reaction he got and continues to get. And I do believe that's partially true. But I think the opposite is that the counterpoint to Daniel Bryan and the raw sincerity and true emotion that he was able to bring out of people is the manufactured weirdness of Roman Reigns, and that WWE can paint him in a positive light. They can do those things, but they don't, because that's the method they would have to go through to do that. Is not the method that they use to produce television. It's not the method that they use to tell stories, and they can't see outside of their own box to know that the way they tell stories is antiquated, weird, full of tropes. And it honestly would be better to throw everything out aside from the fact that wrestling matches are going to happen and reimagine the whole thing from the ground up. Say, what is this storyline? Okay, well, Dolph Ziggler and Shinsuke Nakamura don't like each other. Well, let's not have them meet in the ring 7 times prior to ever having a match for some reason. What do we want to do? Dolph is going to complain about it, and Dolph is going to be backstage, or he's going to be in different interview scenarios and complain about it. Shinsuke is going to say, I'll fight him anytime. I don't understand why he's not here ready to fight me. And we're going to make this story also about Shinsuke acclimating to the SmackDown roster. Like, Shinsuke kind of getting his feet under him, traveling on the main roster and all that. There are good stories to tell in there that are more about the humans and more about the human side of these wrestlers, that then you just twist a little bit to be, this is a good human or this is a bad human. And I think WWE would find their stories much more exciting to fans than they do now.
Yeah, it's basically the same, you know, 5 or 6 segments a week, especially on SmackDown.
Contract signing, tag team match.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the same stuff over and over again and in different configurations. And I think they do have to break that mold. But, you know, who do you have to get through to in order for that to happen? I mean, it's going to take, you know, a wholesale reverse, of course, you know, from Vince and Kevin Dunn and, you know, the people that oversee creative, and I'm sure Stephanie and Triple H are involved in there. But, you know, honestly, how do you you know, break that cycle. I think they've gotten into a place where they're comfortable, where they're like a, where they're a monolithic entity in their field, and they don't feel like there's enough going haywire for them to justify some kind of massive change in course. But I mean, I don't know what that, where that tipping point is, where they do, but I'm, you know, as a fan who's been, you know, a lifelong fan, you know, it's getting uncomfortable to watch sometimes. You know, it's just like and my wife has noticed this too. I think this past Monday on Raw, and she's like, you know, I've been, you know, with you for 10 years now, and it feels like this program has gotten significantly worse in that period of time. And I'd be like, yeah, I would have to completely agree with you on that one.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I know, speaking of like wives watching with us, I don't really watch any wrestling when Christy's around anymore. She'll if there's something she wants to see, she'll tune in for a moment or two of it. But for the most part, she'll go to like a show a year with me, and that's about it. And a lot of that is that the show is just so hard to palate. Like there aren't good people, there aren't sincere people, and there's nothing really sincere about it. And I mean, that's a WWE issue straight down to, here's our giant set, here's all of these things, here are the commentators who all talk like this and have voices that tell you that they are doing things. Like, there aren't those moments of reality, and that's a real issue for WWE, and hopefully something that in the future they can fix. I think this was a good conversation about it. We did it.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished. We fixed wrestling.
Another week and another problem solved.
Yeah. But we're basically detectives that just keep fixing wrestling on a weekly basis.
We bring up problems, and our solution is always to do a wholesale reimagining of the entire product.
I mean, that to me is, it's weird for that to be every solution, but I honestly, like, when we're talking about problems with WWE, it's one of those things where I'm like, this is too broken. Don't do it. Just throw it out. Let's build something new, and we'll just keep some wrestling. Like, the wrestling's good.
You know, I couldn't even imagine how excited I would be if, like, in the middle of, August after SummerSlam or something, it's like, oh, we're going to run best ofs for 2 weeks, and when we come back, it's going to be a completely different show. People would freak out. It would be that exciting.
Yeah, you find out, like, Vince is retiring and all of that, and I think the change will be more gradual than all of that if WWE makes it, and I look at kind of those first couple years of NXT and what Triple H did and is still doing, but I think NXT has gotten worse over the years at this. But he brings a lot of sincerity. Like, there is something to that, just the approach that he takes. And it's not completely outside the WWE approach, but it's also not what's happening on the main roster that is breaking so many wrestlers. So yeah, Jake, I think I need to run now, actually, as I look at the time, because Jason's waiting on me to edit this show. So,
well, then, I will let you go.
All right. Thank you. Have a good week.
You too.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.